In John 19, Jesus faces trials. And there's an emphasis in 19 and 20 of John on the trial that he faces before the Roman governor, Pilate. We've already looked at the trial that he had before Jewish authorities, speaks of the trial, in a sense, before Annas. Then it says he sent to Caiaphas. Very little is said about that. We know from the other Gospels more details about what took place in that. But John wants to concentrate on what happened with Pilate. And he gives the most details to that. He gives the most space to that. And while this is a very long reading, I want to read this trial, starting with John 18, verse 28. Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning. And to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews? Is that your idea?" Jesus asked, "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Do you think I am a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It is your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this reason I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. With this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe. And went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, O King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of the greater sin. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. This passage, which is a very, very descriptive, very moving passage, appears in seven scenes, and the scenes add to the drama. As we will see as we go through it, there are seven scenes, and the seven scenes have to do with Pilate going in the palace to talk to Jesus and then coming out to talk to the Jews, in and out, seven times. And I think the emphasis is on number four, as we shall see. So, scene one. The implication is that there's already been the trial under Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. They lead Jesus after that trial, which was in the middle of the night. They lead Jesus to the palace of the Roman governor. It's early morning, probably very early. Roman officials were known to do their official business early in the morning. The Emperor Vespasian would begin his official duties before dawn every morning. And then they were done by late morning or noon. So this is very, very early in the morning. They have brought Jesus to Pilate. But to avoid, and this gives us the in and out, why he goes in and out, to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews would not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. It was a Jewish custom. It's not Old Testament. It's not Bible, but it was a Jewish belief that simply being in a Gentile's house made you unclean. And so if they went into this Roman official's palace, it would make them unclean and they couldn't eat the Passover. By the way, the palace was not his permanent residence, but a temporary one. His permanent residence was in Caesarea, which was out on the coast. But during feast days, the Romans wanted a presence in Jerusalem to keep law and order and to cut down the possibility of a rebellion. So during feast days, the governor and soldiers would come to Jerusalem. And when he was in Jerusalem, he would either stay at Herod's old palace or in the fortress, the Antonia fortress. So it was one of those two places that he was using as a temporary palace. But they couldn't come into this because it's a Gentile abode and they didn't want to be unclean. By the way, throughout this, we're going to see it throughout this passage, there is such irony. Irony is hard to define. It's almost better felt than told. If you know enough to understand what the irony is, you catch it. But as far as defining it, it's very difficult. Irony, a stab at a definition is that irony is two-layered. On one layer, there is what is stated. On another layer, there is the real meaning. And the two clash or stand in contrast to each other. It's ironic because one thing is stated, but something else is meant or is seen in what is stated. Also, there's a sense of unawareness. People will say better than they know. It's ironic because they're saying things, but they don't really understand the full import of what they're saying. For instance, earlier in John in chapter 11, when Caiaphas, and we'll be coming back to that in this passage as well, when Caiaphas says that it's good that one man should die so that the nation doesn't perish. He was speaking better than he knew. What he was saying is we need to eliminate Jesus. But the irony of the situation was it was good that one man should die rather than the nation perish. So there's a sense of unawareness. Sometimes it's because the speaker is unaware. He speaks better than he knows. Other times it's because the ones who are listening don't understand the irony of what's being said. So anyway, we'll see irony throughout here. Some of the irony is found right here. They're plotting to murder Jesus through legal means. They're plotting to kill the Messiah, but they don't want to be unclean. They wouldn't be able to take the Passover if they're unclean. So they come to Pilate. Pilate comes out to them, and there's this in and out motion that I talked about. He asks, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" Their response indicates that they're not expecting him to say that, because their response is, "If he were not a criminal, we wouldn't have handed him over to you." Now, what's going on? Pilate had given them a detachment of soldiers in order to seize Jesus, so he was aware that they were seizing him. But it appears here that he didn't really know what all was going on. It may be very well be that Pilate thought, this is some minor matter, Jewish stuff, but I'll send the soldiers and they'll seize this guy and the Jews will take care of it. But then, early the next morning, the Jews show up with this guy, and to their surprise, Pilate starts a trial. They're expecting just sentencing. But he starts a trial. What's the charge against this man? And their response is interesting. If he wasn't a criminal, we wouldn't have handed him over. Don't bother us with the details. We know he's a criminal. And Pilate says, well, then if you, in effect, he says, well, then if you know he's a criminal, then you take him and judge him by your own law. And here we find the sentence has already been passed in their minds. This has never been a real trial. They say, but we have no right to execute anyone. Why do you say that unless you already know what the sentence is? And John adds, this happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, might be fulfilled. So the stage is set. Pilate then goes back inside the palace. And he asks Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus says, in effect, now is that your own idea? Have you investigated this and so you know something about who I am? Or are you just going on what other people have told you? Pilate's response, what do you think, I'm a Jew? I don't know anything about all this stuff. But your people, your chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done? What is it that got these guys so stirred up? Why are they so angry? What's going on here? What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place. Pilate doesn't really know what Jesus is talking about and says, you are a king then. Now, that's a charge I can get a hold of. You're claiming to be a king or you're not claiming to be a king. Okay, you're claiming to be a king. And Jesus says, you're right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born and for this reason came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Pilate says, I think cynically, what is truth? Either he doesn't think there is an answer, because he immediately leaves. Either he doesn't think there is an answer, or he doesn't want to hear it. But at this point, I think Pilate, who still doesn't really understand what's going on in all this mess, has figured out this. Jesus is not the kind of king that they're claiming that he thinks he is. He says something about his kingdom. Actually, literally, my kingdom is out of this world. It's not of this world. It's something from the outside. A politician has trouble getting his or her head around that. But my kingdom is out of this world. If it were of this world, then my servants would fight. But it's not that kind of kingdom. It's from another place. And then he equates it with truth, that this is a kingdom built on truth. Also notice Jesus says, this is the reason for which I was born, and for this reason I came into the world. You may think he's saying the same thing there. He's not. This is why I was born, and this is why I came into the world from the outside. He's going back to the whole idea of the Word become flesh, of God coming into the world. So, Pilate hasn't gotten it all figured out, but he knows enough. He goes back out again. He says to the Jews, I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the King of the Jews? We have no, outside the New Testament, we have no knowledge of this custom. But there was obviously some custom here where Pilate would release a prisoner at the request of the people. And so he's using that to say, do you want this man released? They shout back, no, not him. Give us Barabbas. John comments, now Barabbas had been part of a rebellion. We don't know very much about Barabbas, but we do know this. He had been part of a rebellion. He is described at times as a robber. But the term that's used for that is a term that was a favorite of the Josephus, the Jewish historian. And when he used it of the zealots who were rebelling against Rome. And he used it in a way that said, they're just a bunch of robbers and brigands. Okay? They're not nationalists. They're evil people. We don't know much about Barabbas, but the name is interesting. Bar means son of. Abba is father. Son of a father, or son of the father. They're about to crucify the Son of God and release the Son of the Father. So, Pilate then obviously goes back in and he has Jesus flogged. Now, the Romans had three different ways of flogging people. And we usually think of this flogging as the flogging that takes place before crucifixion. I would argue it's not, because that hasn't actually been determined yet. Sometimes there were three levels of flogging. The one before crucifixion was the worst. Very often people would die during that flogging. And it depended on if you were a Roman or, you know, what your position was. But a slave, and this would be true of Jesus, because as I believe he was actually flogged twice, which was unusual. There's this one, and then there's another one that's recorded in the other Gospels. The second one was absolutely brutal, and in his case, they would have used a whip that would be like a cat of nine tails. It had bone or metal embedded in it. It literally shredded the back of the one who was being flogged. You could see, and more than one writer refers to this, you could actually see organs on the inside. But I don't believe that this was the flogging that Jesus receives at this point. That comes later. At this point, the lowest level flogging was done to teach people a lesson. The worst flogging often killed them. They were never crucified. They died from the flogging. But the lighter one was meant to say, you've been a bad boy. Don't do that anymore. And I think in this case, what he's doing is, Pilate's still trying to release Jesus. He has figured out that this guy's not guilty. Whatever's going on with this whole business of king and kingdom, this is not a threat to Rome. Roman justice should have nothing to do with this. And I think one of the things we see in Pilate is that he is caught between a rock and a hard place for a number of reasons. On the one hand, he is a Roman governor. He is responsible for administering this area. And Roman governors as a whole were known as honorable, efficient men who, I believe, really did try to administer justice. So on the one hand, this guy is not guilty. And this just becomes increasingly clear to Pilate. He's not guilty. He's not a threat. So the honorable governor, Pilate, sees that. Also, I think as he goes on, he comes to see that there's something more to Jesus than any of this. But on the other hand, there is the pressure that's coming from the Jews. And while you would think Pilate wouldn't be susceptible to that because he did not have a good relationship with the Jews, he had started off on the wrong foot. He'd done a whole series of things that did anything from annoying, which is putting it mildly, to just infuriating them. They had demonstrated, they had rioted because of things that he had done in the past, and his response was not exactly diplomatic. He killed people. Okay? When they were protesting or rioting, he would just send in the troops and use the most brutal means to put these down. Because of that, they already didn't like him. The emperor was Tiberius. A couple of things that are important about Tiberius. One was that Tiberius was somewhat paranoid. He wasn't crazy, but he was a little paranoid. Being emperor will do that to you. But anyway, he was paranoid. And if he ever suspected that one of his officials was not really on his side, it was bad news for the official. Okay, anywhere from being dismissed in disgrace to being put to death. Okay, so he was kind of paranoid, and that will come through even more later. But also, for some reason that's not clear, he had a soft spot for the Jews. He liked them. And so Pilate had already gotten these people upset with him. So he's got to be a little careful at this point. Also, there is one other thing, but this all depends on the date. Pilate was friends with a man by the name of Sejanus. Sejanus was the head of the palace guard, the Praetorian Guard, which were responsible for the safety of the emperor. Sejanus was a very powerful man and a friend of Pilate's. In 31 AD, Sejanus lost favor with Tiberius and was executed. And a bunch of his friends were executed at the same time. Now, did Jesus' crucifixion take place before or after? If it's after, it really lends itself to why he would be afraid. But it's not at all clear that it had happened yet. But still, this is the whole mix that Pilate is dealing with. And he's trying to be uncustomably diplomatic. So he has Jesus flogged. The soldiers have a bit of horseplay. They twist a crown of thorns. These thorns, by the way, were not the little crown that we usually see in pictures. Some of the thorns, it's probably from a date palm, and some of those thorns could be a foot long. The crown, if you've ever seen the ancient pictures of the gods of Greek and Roman mythology, there are the crowns stick out that may be the kind of crown, probably was the kind of crown that they put on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe, royalty. They said again and again, "Hail, O King of the Jews." And rather than honoring him, they struck him in the face. Horseplay, they're mocking him. There's irony upon irony. The irony is they're treating him like a king, but they don't believe he's a king for a second. The irony is they're treating him like a king, although they don't believe he's a king, but he really is a king far beyond their wildest beliefs. Then after flogging him, Pilate goes out again. "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis of a charge against him." Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said, "Here is the man." Here is the man, probably in Pilate's mind and probably with his inflection, is meant to say, "This is the guy you want crucified, bedraggled, ridiculed, injured. He is no threat," I think is probably what Pilate is doing. But that doesn't sway them at all. The chief priests and the officials begin to shout, "Crucify, crucify." Pilate says, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis of a charge against him." He knows they can't crucify him. They insist, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God." We're told that on hearing this is outside. Now he goes inside again, and we're told that he's even more afraid. Why is he afraid? Maybe because things are getting more and more difficult, but maybe also it was those last words, "He claims to be the Son of God." In the Greco-Roman world, pagans believed that sometimes gods just showed up in human form. What if this is one of the gods that just showed up and I just had him beaten? Okay. There's a lot of conflicting things going on with Pilate. So then notice his question. It grows right out of that. "Where do you come from? Are you a God in human flesh who just showed up?" Now, it's not incarnation, by the way. The gods and goddesses would just show up incognito and walk around and do things, according to the pagans. Jesus says, "Nothing." Pilate says, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Don't you realize I have the power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus then does speak. "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." Now, who's the one that handed him over? Some people say Judas. I think it's more likely that he's talking about Caiaphas, but he doesn't say. But he does make this point that there's a power beyond Pilate. There's authority beyond Pilate, and Pilate would have no authority or power over Jesus at all if it wasn't given to him by heaven, by God. From that time on, we're told, Pilate tried to set him free. But outside, the Jews keep shouting, and they're playing the trump card now. "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." Remember, Tiberius Caesar was paranoid. What if news gets back from the Jewish leadership that Pilate has let go somebody who claims to be a king? "You're no friend of Caesar." Now, at this point, we don't know if that was a technical term, but by the time of the Emperor Vespasian, maybe 30-some years later, it became a technical term. Friends of Caesar was an official kind of a formal designation. That showed you were on the inside. Now, whether it means that at this point, don't know. But Sejanus, who I mentioned earlier, the head of the Praetorian Guard, Tacitus, the Roman historian, said of Sejanus that if you were a friend of Sejanus's, you had an open door to a relationship with Caesar. So it's important to be a friend of Caesar. If you're not a friend of Caesar, then you're in danger. And Pilate feels that. Then, having heard that, he hears that, and then he goes to the judgment seat. He brings Jesus out. He says, "Here is your king." The Jews shout back, take him away, crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? We have no king but Caesar, the chief priests answered, showing their desperation. Every good Jew would say, we have no king but God. They are now so desperate to do away with Jesus, they commit what would have been considered some of the worst blasphemy. To say, we have no king but Caesar. But it shows how desperate they were. And Pilate hands Jesus over to be crucified. Now, it's an incredible story. But to sum it up, I want us to notice two things that for the very longest time I didn't notice, but it's right here. There are two things that Pilate says, both of them ironic, and both of them parallel to each other. Did you notice? Pilate brings Jesus out at one point and says, "Here is the man." And he brings him out at another point and says, "Here is your king." Those two statements are part of the irony. Here is the man. And in that case, he's probably saying he's no danger. Look how pitiful he looks, having been whipped with the silly crown and the purple robe on him. And yet, I think we should see a deeper meaning in it. Here is the man. John 1 says that the Word became flesh and dwelled among us. Here is the man. Caiaphas said it's good that one man should die and the nation not perish. Here is the man. The man. In Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes, one of his short stories is called A Scandal in Bohemia. And in The Scandal in Bohemia, we are introduced to Irene Adler, who has been portrayed in all kinds of ways since then. But the original Irene Adler was beautiful, intelligent, and outwitted Sherlock Holmes. And at the end of the case, he would have said, I think he would have said if you had asked him, it is right that she did so. He kept, his only payment for the case was her picture. And ever after, always after, he referred to her as the woman. It was a way of honoring her, of saying she was the woman above all women. She was the best that he ever met. I think something like that is going on in John. Jesus is the man, the supreme man, the one that we should all be trying to be like. Then there's the second statement. Here is your king. The Jews didn't believe he was their king. Pilate didn't believe he was their king, although he may have thought that Jesus had a kingly bearing that put him above the Jewish leadership, but still he didn't really believe he was a king. But he was a king. In fact, he was above all kings. And throughout this passage, we have all this stuff about king and kingdom. All the way back when Pilate asks, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus speaks of a kingdom that's not of this world, that's out of this world, and has invaded this world, and that he's the king of that kingdom, and that that kingdom is nothing less than the kingdom of God, and it is built on ultimate truth. When we come to Jesus, that's the one we're coming to, the king. The king with the ultimate kingdom that's built on absolute truth. And it's the absolute truth, not just sort of a theoretical idea of truth, but it is the absolute truth of who God is and what he is doing in the world and what his will for us is. Jesus proclaimed the truth, but not only did he proclaim the truth, he said in John 14:6 that he is the truth. So he is the king. And he means to reign. He reigns in the world, and he means to reign in our individual lives. That's really what kingdom has to do with. The kingdom of God is not a place, but it's a realm, an attitude, where we own Jesus as king, and because he is king, we bow before his will. And we live our lives in harmony with that will. And we live it for his purposes and not our own. We come down to this trial before Pilate, and, you know, it's really, as you read it, it's hard to miss that it's really Pilate who's on trial, not Jesus. Pilate, the Jews, the Romans, us, we're all on trial, not Jesus. The guilty Barabbas went free, and the innocent Jesus went to his death. But it was good that one man die and the nation not perish. It was good for us that the man should die for us, and in dying for us, show himself as the true king. Would you bow with me for a prayer? Our Father in heaven, we thank you for Jesus the man, for Jesus the king. Father, help us to live our lives for you, for him, within your will. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.